Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 74.
This week on the podcast, some serious shit's going down in Egypt, and no one knows what to do.
North Carolina is certain that putting a halt to all voting will put a stop to their invisible voting fraud epidemic.
And our economics expert, Kevin McDonald, explains money to us like we're toddlers.
We have state fair updates from butter cows to rodeo clowns.
And Steve King's on round three of defending his racism, and he's still not sorry.
Bill Clinton's doing a worse job of controlling his foundation than he did of the entire country.
And Bob Filner will literally sexually harass your great-grandmother.
Plus, a creationist author gives us the reason we've needed to re-up our dragon insurance.
All this and more. Plus, don't forget to follow us on Twitter and Instagram. This is Brain Trust Live. Well, we want to welcome our friend Kevin McDonald, friend of the podcast.
Man of too much charisma.
Right. He has warned us that he maybe has too much charisma for this podcast.
Right. And then he wanted a professional introduction, but we don't know what he does.
No.
It's something in business.
He does something in business. We're going to get to him in a little bit because he knows vague things about the economy, which Lila and I don't know. We also think that he may be lying, and we're going to debate him sort of about the realness of whether the economy is actually a thing or not.
Because right.
as listeners know, we don't think that it is.
Right.
So we're going to get to that in a second. That's him sighing right now. That's his charismatic sigh.
He's going to moan in the background.
That's good.
For the first half of the podcast.
He also has a propensity to cackle.
Yeah.
So you may hear him just, even not during our interview, just
right.
laughing.
Just
when
laughing
Lila
to
and I
himself.
When say something hilarious.
Giggling.
Which could happen at any moment.
Be the whole time.
Yeah.
Except for the part where we talk about how everything in Egypt is falling apart.
Which is right now. Yeah.
So we have no domestic news this week because, I mean, we have a ton of domestic news, but
right,
it's fake news.
The lead story is definitely in Egypt because it's a disaster
zone
over there.
It's a mess over there.
It's a huge mess. So
we all know that the military ousted Mohamed Morsi after he was sort of like the first democratically elected president there.
Right.
There have been major protests in the last week or in the last few
all
weeks,
of his
really.
Supporters want him reinstalled.
Right.
So they are protesting, and the military government is just killing them.
Right.
Basically, that's their plan.
The plan so far seems to be that people come in support of democracy, and then they just get slaughtered.
Correct. Yes.
But they haven't stopped coming.
No, almost 1,000 people.
Yeah. If they've learned anything from the Arab Spring, it should be that people are not going to stop coming. Because now they're sort of over being stepped on or whatever. So everyone continues to come and protest. And then everyone continues to get killed as well. That seems to be an ongoing
But the big debate, at least, the big debate here has been whether we should be cutting off aid to them or not. Because everybody, you know, we give them billions of dollars in aid, and everybody is sort of saying, like, well, look, this is a not democratically elected government, and they're
and
killing
no
all of their
really
citizens.
And really sure who the legitimate government is at this point.
Well,
so we're not even sure who we're supposed to be
in talks well, because they had sort of like an interim person who has, stepped down this week because it's a mess. So there's like not really any leader other than just sort of like
the people,
the military.
The military and the people are both thinking they're leaders at the moment, and that's amounted to nobody being the leader.
Right.
But it is, you know, Egypt is our most important ally in that region because it's the most stable, or was the most stable country in the Middle East, and was one of the only countries that would even talk to Israel. And of course, we're big Israel fans, so that was important to us. At the moment, we're not really sure sort of like what this means as far as our diplomacy efforts because it's not clear, first of all, what their position is going to be on the other Middle Eastern sort of semi-revolutions that are being fought because no one knows who the legitimate leader of Egypt is in the first place. It's also not clear whether we should be... it's clear whether we should be supporting a regime that is slaughtering its citizens, but it's not clear... whether that is a regime or not.
Right.
Who the regime is.
Well, and this is like the ongoing problem in the Middle East is
you never know.
But we say that we want democracy in the Middle East. This is what we claim that we want. But the problem is that no country in the Middle East is going to elect a government that we like.
Exactly.
So that's exactly what happened. There was the big Arab Spring.
Right.
They overthrew the government. They had a democratic election. They elected the Muslim Brotherhood.
Because that's what they voted for.
They will continue to probably do something like that.
And we're left with just no... P.S. Ray Ray just broke into the room like a sneaky robber.
Right.
What was that?
I don't know.
Did she open doorknobs now? That's crazy.
Right?
Ray Ray's a chihuahua mix.
Yeah.
Friends of the podcast. If you,
yeah.
She shouldn't be able to reach doorknobs, no. But she just did.
God, right in the middle of my very important point.
Speech, yeah. Too.
No.
Anyway.
No.
In summary.
Improvement on
it's tough. The Middle East democratic issue is tough. It's because there's not... The actual electorate in the Middle East doesn't necessarily think the things that we think people in democratic countries should think.
Right. And the reason that we haven't cut off aid is because while certainly we don't support a government killing 1,000 of its citizens,
right.
If left with the option of the Muslim Brotherhood and...
And a government that kills 1,000 of its citizens, how do we think Saddam Hussein got put in power in the first place?
The government... That government, that military government right now, is going to work better for our interests.
No, exactly. That's the problem that we always run into in the Middle East, is we think we want democracy, we don't actually like democracy there, we install somebody who's not democratically elected. And then we work with them for a while until we decide we hate them.
Kevin,
well, we're calling on
you. This is also, you're looking at a country that hasn't had a democratic government in
right,
a long
this
time.
Right, this is new.
And the foundation of, like, parties and viable candidates,
exactly.
They don't exist in the country.
Right.
So, like, all of a sudden, you're going to have freedom. It's a power vacuum. So the people who have power are going to take it, and there's not, a viable government alternative right now inside
and
the country.
And the only other countries in the Middle East that have democratic parties that are entirely on religious lines.
Religious lines,
right, exactly.
So the way that democracy breaks down in the Middle East anyway, the countries they have to model themselves on don't have a democratic party and a Republican party. They have a Christian party and a Muslim party and a Shia party and a Sunni party. And
right.
Like these are the parties that we actually see in the Middle East.
But the ones that are viable have been having that for a while.
Exactly.
And it's this idea of an infant country.
Yeah.
You all of a sudden are going to create parties out of nowhere. It's
tough.
Yeah.
It's not easy.
Right.
And then you end up with a military that also is essentially, it's a party that represents itself.
And
that's tough too, because they have been leading the show for a long time, so they think that they could continue.
Right.
Yes.
Well, obviously that's what they're thinking right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway.
So in any case.
Giant mess.
That's a mess. It's evolving constantly, but mostly it's evolving in the direction of people dying at protests.
Right.
And
now, Kevin is here.
Yes.
And... Remember when you wanted to go on vacation to Egypt?
Yes.
And I said no.
Yes.
Because something like this was going to happen. I just as
Brent's been really trying to call you on this.
People who listen to the podcast know that Lila and I like to be right, and it happens all the time.
Constantly.
And not only do we like to be right, we love to be able to prove ourselves right publicly.
Right.
Which is what I'm doing right now.
Well, I do have to, in my defense, I love a good bargain. And you can get the cheapest trips to Egypt right now. Like, these world-class tours are, like, a fraction of the price.
Yes.
And I have to say, I'm a survivor. I'm a survivor.
Yeah. That's true.
And I would work it out. Like, Brent going to the Middle East is a disaster. Because he will end up dead. Even in a very viable place Israel.
Well,
gone.
Lila and I would have ended up at a good protest, probably, though.
Yes, yes.
That's something we like to do sometimes.
You're like danger-prone Daphne of things we do. Like, if there's a disaster ready to happen, you're going to be in the middle of it. So, I like the prices.
You like the price point.
Yes, I like the price point. I thought
it was... Hunting, but, it's all about money.
Right, it is. It really is. But, and you know, it's my ability to survive. I do have to say, Brent going to the Middle East is a bad idea.
Yeah. You're like Beyonce.
A lot like Beyonce. Destiny's Child.
Yeah. Yes.
You're a survivor.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we brought you news of a North Carolina voter ID law that had passed, that had not yet been signed.
Now it
was going to do everything terrible that a voter ID law could do. This is
right.
One of the most sort of ambitious attempts at shoving the Voting Rights Act striking down in our faces.
Right. This is sort of like the most restrictive
of the slew of laws that places like Texas and others, you know, I think Ohio or somewhere have introduced. This is House Bill 589, and it does everything.
Yeah,
it's a real full service law.
Yeah,
it reduces early voting.
Mm-hmm.
It's a voter ID law, so it requires voter IDs, but it does not allow student IDs to be used as identification to get your ID.
Right.
It ends pre-registration for teenagers who haven't yet turned 18, which, in effect, disenfranchises people whose birthdays are near Election Day. Because,
right, because
if you have to be 18 to register, it takes you a while to register. You can't just register immediately. And so then, suddenly, and you can't do same-day registration. So there's a series of weeks where you're where you're legally entitled to have the right to vote and are not able to because of paperwork restrictions.
Well, and I know you're going through a lot. Can we compare North Carolina's voter restrictions to their gun laws?
That would be kind of fascinating. Yeah, because you can probably just go and get a gun anytime you want.
The exact opposite with the student
exactly.
ID.
Yeah. Take any ID. You don't need an ID. We'll take your word for it. You seem like a nice person. The bill theoretically... the bill also lessens the requirements on super PACs to report where their money's coming from.
Oh, that sounds... Sure, of course.
So that's awesome. And it also... It kills the state-sponsored voter registration drive. No one's going to even know to register to vote or know what these laws are. It theoretically is going to start offering free IDs through the DMV, and that... in and of itself, is going to cost the state $834,000 the first year, and then $24,000 every 2 years after that.
Sure.
Just to provide all these IDs. And it's not really going to address the problem because there are a lot of other issues that prevent people from getting IDs. They aren't just like, oh, I have to pay for the ID, but you have to get to the DMV. Right. You have to prove that you are who you are at the DMV. And you need a social security number.
And we saw how hard this was. Like, remember when Wisconsin was trying to do this, there was that YouTube video of that woman who, like, went to the DMV and was sort of, like, taking, like, secret video of herself, like, trying to get one of these IDs, and it was sort of, like, basically impossible, like, even though she had everything that she was, like, it's sort of, like, even if you can get to the DMV, it's sort of, like, it's a huge... process. Voting should be the easiest thing that you get to do.
Yeah.
So you shouldn't have...
In some states, it is.
It is. Yeah.
And even when you come across a person in a state with less restrictive voting laws that is trying to make it more complicated, you can be like, no, I don't need an ID to vote here. Just give me the damn ballot.
Right.
And, you know, in California... they'll give you a provisional ballot, regardless of who you are, and you figure it out later. The reasoning that the governor here he wrote an op-ed in the Raleigh News, or the Raleigh News and Observer, and his reasoning for why they need this law, it's better safe than sorry. I know there's no voter fraud now, but you never know when voter fraud could strike up.
Well, and that's sort of like the argument against all of these laws, is that it's just not
happening voter fraud.
Anyway. Yeah, exactly.
It's not happening.
Well, and laws like these are targeted towards the elderly and the
lower income. Yeah, it's Democratic constituencies. Yes. It's minorities. Yeah. It's the young. It's students. Yeah. It's the elderly. These are all people that aren't going to have an easy time getting IDs.
That was the second part of his speech, right?
Yes.
I am targeting.
Here's who I am targeting.
The elderly, the poor.
It's already been taken up by the NAACP and the ACLU. Mm-hmm. Everyone's already challenging the law. And even though the Justice Department is not required to review this law, they are still allowed to review any law they want. They're just
We've already heard Eric Holder say that he was going that he wanted the Justice Department to review the Texas law. So
I think this will be invalidated because the law blatantly prevents 18-year-olds from voting. That in and of itself is enough to invalidate
the
law.
It's against the Constitution. Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah,
so
it's unconstitutional.
That's not something you can do. But anyway, they're terrible. It's a terrible place.
Well, and North Carolina
did not move to North Carolina.
No, and North Carolina was just, they've been having like a slew of all of these things. Like,
I know, they're having a big backlash, I think. It's sort of, they're worried about the direction the country is going because they want to hold on to their history of bigotry as they can.
I was about to say, if you look at some states, Iowa being one of them, they're kind of forward-looking. Like, if you want to go the backwards end, like, you basically, like, what's the most conservative back-ass laws you can find? And it would be in North Carolina.
Yeah. You wouldn't necessarily expect that, though.
They're not.
It wouldn't be unexpected.
But if someone was like, where are the most backward laws in America found, I wouldn't immediately guess North
Carolina. It wouldn't
Carolina.
Be like, it probably wouldn't.
Where would you
guess?
Mississippi.
I was going to say, it wouldn't even be in your top five.
No.
You would go through all of the other seven states.
I would go through a lot of the
first.
Deep South.
You would go,
I would go through a lot of the sort of Dakota-y north places.
The vague west. Right, you would go through Idaho and Utah.
Yeah.
And you would go through all of those places first.
Maybe
be like number 12 on the list, I think, probably. Nebraska. You'd hit Missouri.
I would put South Carolina before North
Arkansas.
Carolina.
Probably.
I mean, certainly, South Carolina might make my top five, but North Carolina wouldn't have.
Mm-hmm. Right, because, like, North Carolina, like, I get that, like, they're sort of, like, red sometimes, but they're also, like, a little purple. Like, they elect Democrats to the
they're
Senate.
They're north there's of South Carolina.
They have a Democratic senator
they
right now.
They have a good education system. They have some great universities.
They have great universities. They have, like, a lot of tech things going on there and stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, it doesn't seem like it would... Hopefully there will be backlash against this.
There will be, and I think specifically because they have, you know, they have UNC there. That's why there's so much of this that's targeted at students, I think.
Yeah.
And I don't think that the UNC people are going to be like, well, sure, we'll just stop voting.
Well, and the other thing is, and you and I have talked a lot about this anyway, like, to... once you attempt to try and take someone's voting rights away, usually
it gets really hard.
Usually what happens is that they make sure that they keep them.
Yeah.
Like,
they,
that's what happened in
they
Florida.
They wait in line the for 6 hours
reason,
if they need
the
to.
The only reason Obama won Florida this year is because Rick Scott tried to take their voting rights away.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
so people
so
decided
like, well,
that, they were
forever.
That they were okay with waiting for days to vote. Otherwise... But right.
They could have just not cared.
The
so
same
you
thing.
Thank him.
The same.
You should actually write him a letter and thank.
Exactly. The
yes,
same thing
Rick
could
Scott.
Happen here.
Thank you for turning North Carolina blue.
One can only hope. Meanwhile, and this is when we get into the part of the podcast where Kevin's going to tell us things.
Right.
Evidently, the deficit shrinking.
Right. We're going to ask
some questions about the deficit.
We're going to ask some stupid questions of Kevin.
Yeah,
basically.
And he's going to answer the questions. Hopefully in language that we understand.
Right,
he was not doing a great job in the car today.
No, we were telling him what we were going to ask him earlier in the car as we figured it out. And he sort of like went into a big sort of like rambling
speech about it that we didn't understand.
No, we didn't get it at all.
No.
Which is why he's here.
Yeah.
So hopefully
do better this
you've
time.
Thought long
know,
and hard about it, Kevin.
Know,
because otherwise, you're of no use to us.
So basically, we have a deficit that we've had for a long time. I think you said... That only of like in the last 20 years we've only run a surplus in 4 years, and those were under Clinton. It's not a surprise because we've been at war for the entire rest of the last 20 years. But our deficit is shrinking now.
Mm.
So for the first 10 months of the year this year, I think the deficit was almost 40% lower than it was the previous.
And they're saying what? Because we're having some more tax revenue come in.
Yeah,
and
the sequester.
And some cuts.
We're not cutting anything.
Exactly.
I mean, we're cutting everything.
We're cutting everything.
Well, I said the opposite of what I meant.
I think the biggest triumph that's come along is the U.S. economy is actually growing.
Yes.
And
I actually heard on the radio earlier today that like home prices are up by like 14% over this time last year. It's the most, like July was the biggest month for car sales. I think like... building home builders
new
have like are up for like the highest like since 2005 or something I heard on the radio earlier today. So like things are sort of like starting
slowly
to like kick in a touch.
This is what it's called like a delayed reaction. So with the economy as bad
it's
as
a technical
it was,
term, delayed reaction.
No, it is.
I don't know if you've heard of that.
Because basically, prior to the recession that started in 2007, you saw the formation of new houses. So you would graduate, and you would not move back with your parents.
Right.
That's
kind of
an American thing.
Yeah, you would move. You were an adult then. So
you were an adult.
Moved on.
You were called a new household. Even if you formed with other students, you actually created a new household outside of your parents. Well, what was happening in 2007 is, oh my gosh, the kids from college came back in.
And everyone acted like they were failures. But they could not find jobs, so they were not.
And a lot of times,
Kevin thinks those people are failures.
Awful.
Just
they're
so
terrible
we're clear.
People.
Yeah.
And honestly, if you had a major in communications, blow yourself up. Like
that's what I had.
There is no Chinese person who went to university and came out with a communications degree.
Kevin's obsessed with China. P.S.
Oh,
love China.
When we asked him if he wanted to be on the podcast, he was like telling us that he was going to tell us about Chinese currency, and we were like,
"Don't
we're not talking about Chinese currency." You're
he
not to mention. He has a look on his face that he's going to do it right now. We're shutting it down.
He's going to talk. What he is going to say about China is that China holds a lot of American debt.
Well, they basically fund us.
Right. They buy government bonds from the U.S. They hold a lot of American debt, and that's how we're able to operate with a surplus.
You know
that's
why they
what
do
he
that?
Was explaining in the car.
You know why they do that?
Is it because
we buy their products?
Right.
We're basically fueling their economy.
I think so I just got a couch from there earlier today.
You did.
Yeah.
And
no.
This is the idea is that actually, historically, China isn't crazy about the U.S. It's not like they're big for
comments.
Right. But it's basically a cycle of life. They, like, we buy a bunch of their products. And to keep us afloat, they, like, issue us a bunch of debt.
Right.
And
they're
the number one holder of U.S. debt currently.
Now, should we stop buying all those products and start making them here?
Well, it's... Yes. The short answer is yes, because the American workforce has turned into this, like, intellectual, like, powerhouse. But what you're finding is people that are highly educated, that are highly skilled, make a lot of money, but the lower half...
Right, there's no other jobs available.
And so everybody's talking about the 1%, but the 1% is actually fueled by the, like, 99% because they keep buying couches from Walmart. And it's a fact.
No,
it's basically the 99% is like, you're terrible, you're making so much money, but They're highly educated. Their work sells worldwide. When, like, somebody makes a movie in Hollywood and it sells worldwide for $1 billion, the answer is most of that is held at a, like, small smidgen, where everybody goes to Walmart and buys, like, couches, pillows, comforters, and that's all fueled by, like, Chinese, like, growth. And what's going to happen in the next 10 years, and this is my personal opinion, is the Chinese are going to develop an internal economy. And, like, one thing that's different in the U.S. versus basically the rest of the world is we can actually fuel ourselves internally. We actually...
We could produce the products that we need. We have a lot of people. We have an industrial sector that's dead but could be alive.
Where if you look at Europe, which is the only really, like, viable, like, first world economy, they have to be conscious of their exports. We never did.
Right.
And Japan also has to be conscious of their exports. They, like, the U.S. doesn't. And what's going to happen is, as the Chinese, they're more the American model. They'll have an internal economy. And as soon as they have enough internal economy, which is kind of crossing the zone, they'll no longer need
our debt. They don't need us. Right. Yeah, exactly. Right.
And then are we screwed because we
screwed.
Don't... Great.
Basically.
Here's, well, and in the car, you were talking a lot about the difference between debt and deficit and what... Because, you know, we have this debt ceiling conversation coming up again.
Yep.
Everyone sort of at this point knows that that's fake. Sort of a false issue because it's sort of an ongoing sort of cycle. It's not like a thing where you can just decide to stop.
Well, it's a thing we've done for the last 20 years.
Right. Like, once you're in the cycle, you can't just be like, well, it's over.
Once you...
Not going to pay our bills anymore.
Once you, once you pay for something...
Right.
Then...
You owe that
once
money
you buy something, then you have to pay for it.
Right, exactly.
That's what the debt ceiling is.
Right.
We've already bought it. We've already spent it.
You were talking about the difference between deficit and debt, because that seems to be a distinction that people are
not really...
so
many people don't get that.
Yeah.
So
tell
us. So
explain it in words.
So, and we're going to do it, like, we're going to boil it all the way down to, like, a personal example. So, basically, you have a monthly income.
Yeah.
So, if you were actually spending in excess of your monthly income, you're running at a deficit. So basically, every month, your rent, your food, and all of that, you're
adds
running...
Adds up to more than what you take in.
Right. So, and the U.S. government is doing that because they...
And we do it all the time.
They spend more money than they get in taxes.
Well, like you said, like 16 out of the last 20 years or whatever.
All the time.
Basically,
for all the
we've
time.
Been doing
that.
Sometimes
right.
in excess of 30% to 40% of your income.
Right. That's
so if you were rolling around spending 40% more than you make, how long can you sustain that?
I mean, certainly not long on a personal level. But isn't, I mean, there is a difference between doing that on a government level because,
right, there's, it's,
because you
it's
have
not,
responsibilities
not,
that are beyond, like, I could decide
I
to...
Say, it's not a total fair comparison to talk about your personal income because that's a thing that Republicans are doing and it's not necessarily...
It's not too far from the truth because Lila is a very smart person and she's gone to
a
great university.
Some have said.
And if she was the only country, and this is true, that didn't default on their debt. The U.S. is the only kind of first world country that hasn't defaulted on their debt. Even if you look at the U.K., France, Germany,
they've all defaulted.
And basically, she's the only viable option. She's a safe haven for your money because of her reputation. Because
she pays you back.
Mostly.
Or
refinances.
Or
she could pay you back.
She could pay you back.
More than necessarily actually paying you back. It's just the ability to pay you back.
That's exactly what the U.S. government is doing. It's her ability in the future because she's so great and smart and intelligent.
Exactly.
Right.
But it's not really what she's doing right now.
Right.
But, like, at a certain point, do we not have that ability?
Exactly.
Right. Yes.
How much does her value actually carry into the future?
Right.
Her perception of how much
Lila's into infinity. Yeah, exactly. Right.
Yes.
We're talking about my
next
value.
Facebook. Next Facebook.
The country of Lila can go on forever.
Right.
But it's
one of the most stable countries ever.
But it is that concept that how long can you trade in on this idea? Because, not to say this is... At some time in the future, China might overtake the U.S. as the growth alternative. And why would...
Well,
you know what that is? Anti-American. That's what that is. You are against America.
Here is where I think me and Brent's sort of more policy-centric focus and our belief that the economy is not real maybe comes in.
Yeah.
Because the difference between being a country in this situation, because like sort of on the mathematical level, this what you're saying makes sense. Where, you know, if you were a person who was operating your own finances this way, which many Americans are, unfortunately, then you're sort of up shit creek if something falls apart. And, you know, I mean, that's what happened. You know, your home price suddenly right. decreases, and you're in a massive amount of debt that you right. can't pay right. back, and you don't have assets anymore, right. so you can't, you know, you're in way over your head,
right.
and then you die alone in a gutter. But
that was Latin American economy. South America, whatever you want.
And then you die alone in a swamp.
Brazil.
But,
yeah, exactly.
But in any case, so on a personal level, that idea makes sense. But on a sort of national level, because we're talking about a much bigger sort of responsibility, because this isn't just about us paying bills that we don't mm-hmm. necessarily have to pay. We can't necessarily cut yeah. the costs that we have. These are larger policy issues.
Yeah.
And these are really like people's like lives sort of are affected by this in a different way than your personal life is affected by your personal bad decisions, because this is about people making decisions that affect
And that's the crux of the argument. What right. responsibility do we have? I mean,
right.
you know,
exactly.
if you, you know, you and I think that we have a lot of responsibilities, and there are people who think that we have no responsibilities.
Right. And also, I think that our responsibility to sort of maintain some sort of safety on sort of the societal and yeah. social level trumps our ability to repay these debts.
Right.
Whereas I think a lot of more conservative thought sort of is that we can sort of abandon people on the policy level because it's more important that we not have China hold all of this debt.
Right.
That we not sort of like be operating. I mean, these are the same people that are making it impossible for Americans to not buy houses and go underwater. The, you know, their economic policy is not necessarily allowing this to happen on the personal level. But I mean, this is sort of like, I think the sort of like fundamental difference between right. what we think and what conservatives think.
Well, and I think the conservatives are in a kind of in a la la land. Like the short answer is you're not going to do the average American's not going to do the job that the Mexican right. immigrant
well, and the
first
other
generation
short,
is going to do.
The other issue is that I think, you know, Brett and I are comfortable with the idea of raising taxes as a way of getting ourselves out of this.
Yeah.
And we were against the idea of spending this money on something like a war that didn't end up impacting our economy in a way that sort of allowed us to get out of that.
Well, I totally agree with that. The deficit spending on, and this might be controversial, on the Iraq...
It might not be controversial on this podcast.
Afghanistan
what you're about
war
to say is that we were spending too much on our foreign wars for...
But military spending has been an impediment for...
Well, you're
kind
using
of like technology and
you're
innovation.
Using the like fact that like World War II spurred the economy after, you know, got us out of the Great Depression.
I'm actually talking about the technological innovation. Like basically.
Sure.
Right. And I hate to say it, the U.S. government should be funding technology and innovation.
Well,
that
yes.
is something
yes.
I think we all agree on.
Yes.
I think that the sort of way that we fight war now is a little bit different
yes.
than something like World War II.
But we shouldn't be funding it in a way that is going to allow us to know more ways to blow people up.
But can we port some of that technology to make our existence? Like, GPS is a military technology. That
yeah, but it
a
doesn't
lot
have
of these
to,
are military
it
technologies.
It doesn't have to happen through the military.
I was going
to
say, a lot of these are military technologies that could have been other technologies if we had been funding research for any other
technologies.
Reason.
Right, exactly, yes.
Because the only reason we ever fund research is for the military, and that's why military research leads to all of these sort of...
So instead of... And this is where I'm saying is, don't cut the deficit, just spend it in different ways.
Well,
we would agree with that,
yeah,
too.
And
sure.
this is... You two want to tax
yeah, we
the
want to
1%,
tax
2%.
Yeah, we're trying to tax
yeah.
Kevin
and we
personally.
Want to tax Kevin
and
McDonald.
The issue is... Everybody needs to be taxed more. Because
well,
this is basically...
Yeah. This is
yeah, sure.
something that I would be on board with if I felt like taxes were actually progressive in a way
yeah.
that I wanted
okay.
to. Because
right.
I think that it's fair to ask people in our position to pay more if people at the top are paying a lot more than
yeah.
they're paying right now. It's not fair for me to be taxed at the same rate as them.
But in the pragmatic sense, though, if I made a lot of money, I would hire lawyers and accountants to hide my money. It's almost like they have a competitive
you're at a competitive
yeah. disadvantage that like no matter how you structure the tax code, the same people that are writing it are basically employable by the rich to avoid it. Like everything that happens,
well,
like it happens in a circle. It's actually better to tax corporations.
Well,
we would be fine with that too.
Would,
or make sure they pay what they're being taxed.
I think closing loopholes is important. I think in terms, I think that if you have truly progressive taxation, you're more likely to get more money. I know rich people hide their money, like everyone knows that.
Yeah.
And obviously Mitt Romney is not paying a full 40% of his income in taxes.
Right.
But it's better that he pay 29% than 13%.
Well,
you know?
And you can't really, well, I can't fault Romney for, hey, I make a lot of money, let me hire lawyers
to basically... Well, and that's the thing. I mean, like, if I made that amount of money and there was a way that I could get my tax rate down to 13%, then
I would do
hello.
It. Well, and this is when people say that Warren Buffett's a jerk because he's, you know, because he doesn't pay much in tax... You know, he pays the lowest tax rate he can pay.
Right.
He's not just trying to fund the government single-handedly. Of course he does that. He can be in favor of being charged more taxes and still pay the minimum.
But we still have to charge him for it,
right,
though.
Exactly.
Right?
He's willing to pay the taxes that we charge him. He's not trying to pay all of his money in taxes. No one is.
Well,
that's the problem.
It's these kind of arguments, if you make it economic sense. If he makes a lot of money, of course he's going to hire somebody who... If he can hire somebody for a dollar and they save him $2,
exactly.
Why wouldn't he do that?
Why wouldn't he do it?
Like,
exactly.
He's smart.
Well, and
so why wouldn't
a smart
man.
And he's not going to hire an accountant who's going to do a bad job.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, you don't hire a hack accountant if you're Warren Buffett. Like,
yeah,
I mean,
right.
You
exactly.
hire the best person who's going to make sure your tax bill
is $0.
But
the thing is that it's laws written in such a way that you can't get your tax burden down to 13%.
Correct.
It has to be the minimum you can get it down to is 29% or whatever. Then that's an improvement.
Yes.
These are all improvements.
What about if I said this, though? I think people are focused on the deficit as such a horrible, horrible thing. I actually think the way to solve what's going on with the U.S. economy is to onshore jobs and take a little bit of a hit right now and reform healthcare, reform... If you onshore jobs in the U.S. that are high-quality manufacturing jobs, give them a tax break. Why not?
Yeah.
And rich people will onshore. If
I
you
mean,
want to incentivize
well, and
things
if
to
we
happen...
we can put all of those people to work doing jobs like that, too, I mean, we're making so much more money just on tax revenue. I mean,
isn't that what we learned from the New Deal, ultimately, that we've forgotten? That you can spend...
Yes.
That when the economy goes to shit
yes.
and no one has work, even if you're going to a deficit, you've
yes.
got to spend money to get people back
right.
on their feet.
But this is what's going to happen, and people, like, instead of having foresight, this is what always happens, is we wait till it's a disaster.
Yeah, of course.
So when
so we
China
do with everything.
Out,
we're going to do it with this, we're going to do it with
all things.
Anything else, we're going to do it with global warming,
but,
we're going to do, I mean, any. It's just sort of like, it has to...
We're real...
It has to have gone south before we decide to fix it, instead of sort of being proactive about anything.
But
I mean,
we're not the only country. Greece does it, Italy does it, Spain does it.
Sure.
Those are three countries that we do not want to be considered.
Let's not compare ourselves to them.
Might be our cousins. Might be our cousins, right?
Like,
well, I mean, Greece's debt was basically subsidized by Germany. Like,
yeah, but this is a...
Why are
a
we
thing,
not the Greeks to...
The Germans to the...
Chinese. Chinese are the Germans, we're the Greeks.
Yeah. I mean, we're letting that happen. That's a model that we allowed to emerge in the third world. Greece
right.
was borderline third world
right.
when it
right.
took on all
True.
That debt. They forced all these economic changes
yes.
on it to make the economy more sort of like capitalist friendly
yep.
and investment friendly. And then the whole thing imploded because no one in Greece could afford food anymore.
No.
And it was a disaster.
Yeah.
I mean, I was in Greece soon after it switched to the euro. And I was there during the Olympics that they
yep.
hosted. And of course, you know, they got the Olympics together at the last moment. They spent all of their money.
Yep.
They were just wildly spending at the time.
Yep.
And we were there and we were like... everything here is so expensive, and no one in Greece has any money. There's no way this is sustainable.
Yes,
you know,
right?
It's,
even
as
an outsider who was like just there for 2 weeks, like you
I
knew
was
that that was
there
be the
for
case.
5 months.
Oh, wait, did you do a semester?
I did a semester there.
Oh,
yeah,
you did
fancy.
A semester in Vietnam, but
yeah,
I didn't do a semester.
I'm a world traveler, a real world traveler over here.
You spent your 21st birthday though, right?
I spent my 21st birthday
right.
in Greece, yeah.
Which was a downer because you could already drink.
Yeah. In fact, and I don't drink now, but I had gotten drunk the night before my 21st birthday, so I did not drink on my 21st birthday because I was like, I can't do this again.
She's high quality. That's why we bet on her future.
That's why the country of Lila is
going
to
It's going
to
be
carry
going
on.
Strong.
Well, and if people want to do, like, I actually think the U.S. needs to be a little bit less like Greece and
yeah.
more like Germany. Like, that's
well,
your model
they,
to set it up like.
They found, the austerity model doesn't work. That's what
we
learned
that.
Recently because they did a study that found that even,
yes.
even the actual, like, sort of example that they were using didn't work.
Yes.
They,
right.
The math
well, there
was wrong.
There was
math was wrong.
There was a problem with their Excel
there
document.
There was a glitch in the Excel document.
Yeah. Seriously.
A complex document. It's hard to get your Excel.
Now, I don't know how to, I don't know how to work Excel.
No, I would never even try. The last thing I want to do is have to look at Excel. I
wouldn't want to be running the world's economy based on my Excel experience, because that would be bad.
Excel rules the world. It actually is one of the most flexible. It's used everywhere.
If well, running the world
not if you fuck it up.
involved me checking my Facebook page, I could be running the world left, right, and center.
But we also want to talk to Kevin about sort of, because Kevin is a corporate accountant. Oh, sorry. I fell asleep while I said just those two words.
Right.
And so one of the other issues that we want to talk about this week is there was sort of like a New York Times takedown of the Clinton Foundation, which was sort of like...
It was awesome.
It was sort of awesome, and it was kind of like a big deal. Yeah. Like everybody was sort of like, oh, God, I can't believe they did that.
Did you know that the Clinton Foundation is now called the Bill, Hillary, and Chelsea Clinton Foundation?
Yeah, well, because they're... Yeah.
Because they're trying not to be the Clinton Foundation anymore, because they're trying to make it sound like Chelsea runs it so that they can stop being in...
Also, Chelsea doesn't have a job anymore because Rock Center got canceled.
Exactly.
So
now it's over. Wow. God. What a shame. But anyway, it's the organization's now 10 years old, and so they were doing sort of like an internal review. And the review turned up some unsettling things, one of which is that the organization has run a deficit in recent years, like pretty massive deficits.
Right.
Even though it's all fun, I mean,
bringing in money hand over fist, basically.
Despite the fact that they spend literally all their time fundraising, and that Bill Clinton is a massively successful fundraiser for them, somehow they were running a deficit, and no one knows.
No one knows why.
The other concern:
they fired their CEO,
They have a new CEO. Well, here's one issue that was maybe a problem: is that the CEO was working part time out of Arkansas.
No.
The Clinton Initiative is located in New York City.
In New York.
They had opened offices
in Hillary Harlem. Clinton has moved her offices into there, by the way, into this new fancy pants office.
Well, and this is problematic because Clinton's going to run for president, and this is going the only thing that there is going to be to scrutinize about what she's been up to since she left Secretary of State
is the money is coming in and out of the Clinton Foundation.
Exactly.
The Bill, Chelsea, and Hillary Foundation.
Exactly. And then the other issue is that Bill had this personal assistant, Douglas Band, who started a consulting firm that then he took on Clinton as a paid advisor to and poached a lot of, a lot of the people who were funders of the Clinton Initiative are now clients of his firm, and it works on retainer, so they're basically paying him money hand over fist. And it's not very clear where the Clinton Global Initiative begins and this for-profit venture ends.
Right.
It's moved into these, midtown offices. It has, a bunch of Wall Street executives and old Clinton aides are involved in it. And somebody who worked at the State Department with Hillary Clinton. Those are all people that are sort of involved in this consulting firm. And it's sort of like, they said that they wanted to merge corporate consulting, public relations, and merchant banking into a single business, which sounds patently evil, but I don't know what it is.
I know all of those words separately, but listed
together
on a list
like that
together
doesn't mean
terrifying.
Anything to me, but it sounds very scary.
Evil.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it means.
It's a capitalist evil firm.
Yeah.
So, in any case, there are a lot of concerns about how close this organization seems to be with the Clinton Global Initiative, and that plus the fact that they can't seem to hang on to their money has turned the whole thing into a debacle.
Well, and even if... Here's the thing about the Clintons, is... People always, whether fair or not, sort of have this perception that they are always, up to something nefarious.
Yes. And a lot of the criticisms of the Clinton Global Initiative, one thing that this article said is that a lot of them seem to echo the criticisms that Clinton had in his first years as president, that, very closely, because it was all about sort of, the chaos.
Right.
And
chaos,
the sort of...
The cronyism, the conflicts of interest that are coming out of this review.
Yeah.
In an effort to address some of these problems, that's how Chelsea ended up involved. She was unemployed, but they also wanted to sort of put a new face on what was going on.
And I do have to say, this is a common problem with foundations, because you don't know this about me, but I actually audited the World Bank, many years ago. And one of the things is, when you look at trying to get money to an issue, you want to reduce the number of layers that you're giving money to. And it's anytime you have multiple layers and you have people consulting and doing, you reduce the amount of money that's actually
the amount of money, and it also probably makes it harder to get.
And visibility to actually solving the problem. And one of the things is I was auditing a trust fund, and I was like, who are these people? Why do they need Hummers? Their protection? And basically, it's one of those things where if most of the money is getting to solving the problem, you've done a good job in a foundation. But adding visibility in these multiple layers where you're like, where is the money actually going? It goes to a bigger problem that they seem to have multiple layers in relationships, and what they're solving is not the problem.
I was going to say, it's going to a deficit. It's not going anywhere, apparently.
Well, and it's a problem because we're talking about a very politically, yes. you know, a politically connected family, and all of the donors to this organization are politically connected or economically connected as well. So there are a lot of competing interests that are not strictly about helping women in Africa.
Right.
Well, that's the thing. The other thing that's upsetting about the story, because like when I personally think about the Clinton Global Initiative, I think about all of the good that they are, all of the money that they're supposedly giving to people to sort of like solve the AIDS crisis in Africa. Exactly. And when I find out that the money is just sort of like going into the ether, that's upsetting.
It's so much of it is going into the ether that there are a lot of concerns that the organization really won't be able to outlive Bill. That if Bill retires,
well, and that's what he said.
When they hired
this new CEO, that was supposedly what their endgame was, and that's part of what bringing Chelsea in was about too.
They're trying to raise an endowment now. Because,
right, they want this to be able to go on because after him.
Currently, they're basically relying on him personally going and fundraising from his rich friends.
Right. But it sounds like once the money even gets into the organization,
well, it's like going nowhere.
One of the biggest measures, and I don't know if we have that information on the foundation, is basically for every dollar raised, how much gets to the end result.
And you can look this up, because I remember my dad always, you know, he likes to give to charities, and he always, and you can find this out, is you can look
how much
per dollar is actually going to, and how much of it is like to overhead costs or whatever.
But this is different because this is how money for people that are entangled in both for-profit and non-profit ventures.
That's the problem.
Because it's connected.
Right. When it's a non-profit, you can look those things up.
You can look up the non-profit money
going
to non-profit ventures.
Correct.
But when you have someone who runs a non-profit being paid as a private consultant to a money-making, you know, to a for-profit industry that works in basically regulation and, you know, is essentially sort of a glorified, like, lobbying firm.
Well, I do have to say, most of the foundations that I've looked at or audited, you wouldn't allow the person who's intimately involved with fundraising to have a consulting practice.
Exactly.
Right, you wouldn't.
Exactly.
It's basically a siphon.
Yeah.
And as much as I do love a good Clinton, like, charming, charismatic.
Sure.
Very charismatic people.
But an idea that you have a for-profit consulting firm
connected to your organization is suspect. And no one will talk about it because everyone's scared of the Clintons.
I know.
The people who were writing this article tried to interview a bunch of friends and associates of the Clintons, and no one would talk to them.
Well, and that's what made it sort of interesting that it was even in the New York Times, because there were people who were sort of surprised that the New York Times was even willing to take it on. Because, like, people are genuinely afraid of them, which is ridiculous. But I mean,
but that's
if I get a call after this podcast,
do they call you ever? Do you get calls from the Clintons?
I never do until this moment. Until this.
Right, exactly. They can get it. They can find your number.
Oh,
yeah.
They have the power. They have the power.
We can't have their phone number, sadly. Mm-mm. So I have some thoughts.
Yeah.
Just a few thoughts.
I know. You and Hillary were besties at one point.
We've chatted.
Right.
And I think that this is sort of interesting timing, because this says to me that the New York Times is not going to be an endorser of a Clinton run, because this would not have been in their interest to do this.
Right.
Basically, this article repeatedly highlights the degree to which this will have an impact on her running for president.
There's 10 people from the state of New York that may be running for president.
Right, they've got some hometown.
They have some people to pick
heroes
from other than Hillary Clinton, who's actually not from there.
No, exactly.
So, much as she
would like you to believe that
maybe
she is.
Isn't
they
she?
Don't care.
No, I'm just
incorrect.
Kidding. I'm totally kidding.
That's
Crystal Gillibrand, Andrew Cuomo, Peter King, mysteriously.
That's the state that you go to carpetbag to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We were just talking about this the other day.
Right. You don't carpetbag Iowa.
You don't?
Scott Brown has been in Iowa. We're like, is he running for the open Senate seat there? Because he can't possibly be running for president. We're like, you don't carpetbag in Iowa.
No, who would ever do that? That's ridiculous.
You carpetbag in New York,
right. You run for president
in
Iowa.
You don't move from Massachusetts to Iowa to run for the open Senate seat.
That's an insane thing to do. That's wrong. It's a wrong choice.
It's a wrong choice.
Yeah.
But speaking of the Clintons. We talked about this last week because we had Mike Nuttall on, who is sort of an infamous Hillary Clinton supporter.
Correct.
You know. But we had an adult conversation with him last week. It was very good.
We
were sort of initially thinking that we were going to eviscerate him, but then
But then
we decided that was not the best way to go.
He decided not to scream, and so we were like, we shouldn't scream.
Right, it was
pleasant.
We'll
look bad. So we just talked in words. We could. But we
but he's not here, so fuck her.
That's right.
just kidding.
We mentioned that there were all these Hillary biopics in the works.
Yep.
And because of these Hillary, which one was being, as a documentary that was being produced by CNN, one was a miniseries being produced by NBC. It was supposed to be, it was to air on NBC. It was supposed to be produced by Fox. Fox dropped
Fox
out.
Fox pulled out.
Which I was surprised about, and they say that it's not because, I mean,
it is. It absolutely,
I think
100%
it probably is. This is the first time that I've ever heard of Fox programming having this kind of conflict of interest with Fox News.
Right.
Because usually Fox actually, like Fox programming
is a little controversial.
It's a separate thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it doesn't, they don't, yeah, they can do controversial programming on Fox, or Fox produces controversial programming without really any concern.
Yeah.
You know, they produce things that are on moral issues that they don't agree with.
Right.
They produce,
I mean, Family
shows,
Guy, like, goes out there.
Exactly. They have shows where characters have, like, had abortions and,
yes,
like, done things that Fox News would never approve of.
Yeah.
But Fox Network is not, or Fox Studios is not going to be producing
this
NBC program, and it's only in development. I mean, it's not being produced by anyone as of yet. But
the other thing is that, and we said this last week too, but just, you know, they are sort of, they're not, they wrote this, they basically voted to not have,
right,
to not have any of the,
officially voted not to air
have any
the,
of their Republican primary debates.
Yeah.
And it's like, you and I said this last week, but we'll say it again. It's like, who freaking cares?
No, exactly.
I mean, like,
they
sure
also voted to have fewer of them and to make them less ridiculous.
Right.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you may ultimately, as CNN, you may want to sort of, like, have a national debate between, I think what the RNC should have done was said that they were not going to agree to any terms for a general election debate with these people, because that's what you
want.
That's
the debate CNN wants to show, and NBC wants to show.
Right.
NBC,
because to a certain degree,
and CNN don't give a shit
about
the primary debates.
The
those are
debates.
Funny farm
those
debates
are crazy.
Anyway.
Well, let Fox News have all of those. They're batshit crazy. It's just a bunch of people, like, trying to out
there's
nut
a bunch
job
of
the other. I mean,
Michelle,
like,
Bachmann's and Rick Santorum's talking.
Right. I mean, let those all be on Fox
they
News.
They are entertainment.
They should be on Fox News.
Yeah. They don't belong on regular television.
It's not news.
It's not, certainly not news.
It's not news. So, but the other thing about this that's just sort of upsetting is I understand that it's airing on NBC, and I understand that it's airing on CNN, but it's part of CNN Films, which makes documentaries that are non-political, and it's also about, and it's airing on NBC, and it doesn't have anything to, it's not being produced at all by NBC News.
Right.
So, I get that they want sort of, like, equal time, but it's also, it's not being produced by either of the news arms or political arms of these networks. So it doesn't necessarily have, like,
also,
CNN Films can make a movie that isn't necessarily pro-Clinton. Like, I mean, you know, I mean,
they can, I am also shocked because normally I think one area in which probably because Fox News, you know, it appeals to a very specific demographic. These are cable channels that bear the name of these network channels, but are not, in fact, totally related to them. You know, the local Fox News in most cities is not conservative leaning.
No.
It's just local news. I have been on the local Fox News in New York City many times. They do good local
stories.
You've
been on Fox News.
Fox News, too.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Fox News, the network, is not the same thing as Fox News, the sort of national news program that airs on Fox Network. And so usually programming that airs on these networks is not really,
it doesn't have anything to do with their...
And this is the first time that I've really seen this kind of overlap, that where something that is in development by one of the programming arms of these places has been this politicized.
And I think this is the other part, is programming's usually concerned is, will people watch
it?
This?
Yes. Yeah.
And can I sell this?
Exactly. They
and,
don't, it's...
And people will watch, and you will be able to sell things for a Clinton documentary or a miniseries.
So
yeah.
The
Starring
answer
Jared
is...
Allen.
the decision that they're making is not economic.
Exactly.
And
that's
usually
where
programming is economic.
And this is the first time that I've seen something this public happen this way, where a programming arm of a network has decided to do something for political reasons that...
But also, to a certain degree, I mean, if Fox News is angry about this, produce a takedown documentary of it.
Right. Like, what... They don't have a network they can air shit on?
They have multiple networks
they can
air
shit on.
They
have all the networks in the whole world.
They can air it on Fox Sports if they want to.
Exactly.
I mean, they can shut down all of their networks to air an hour and a half documentary about how terrible Hillary Clinton is.
They have that power.
I would watch.
Oh, well, I'd watch it over Fox Sports, that's for sure. But in any case, that seems to be a controversy that won't go away.
Yeah.
Which is silly.
I wonder where this is going to go, meaning that, like, programming used to be this independent arm that was basically economically driven.
Like, what does this mean? I don't want to watch a Fox network or watch Fox-produced programming that's all politicized.
No.
You know, and that is basically just shows that are there to teach me about the evils of abortion and gays. Like, I don't
really
want
that.
Help
you.
I mean,
the only thing that will help
taxes,
you is
like,
network is done.
That's what Glee is for.
God, those programming decisions.
That's a separate problem with programming.
Right, we won't get into that.
We won't get into that. We're a political podcast.
The only thing that will help you in all of this is basically networks dying. So
well, I already
that's
don't
also
have CBS,
another discussion.
So
that's right, you don't. Yeah. Oh my god.
Just a person
Thank
without...
God I do, because Big Brother is really heating up.
Thank God I don't, because I become physically infuriated by the presence of 2.5 men on my television.
Also, football season is starting. I have a lot of reasons to be watching CBS.
These are all things I don't want to know about. Moving on.
Oh, God.
There was a bit of a kerfluffle this week involving a rodeo clown at the Missouri State Fair who donned an Obama mask. And then asked the crowd if they wanted to see a bull run down the president. And, of course, everyone got real into it.
Right.
And then the Missouri State Fair people were like, no, that's not representative of us. We're better than this. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And the lieutenant governor had to, like, had to tweet an apology. And it was, like, a whole thing. And in any case.
It was a whole thing.
It was a whole thing. And that's not what the important part of the story is. Because what's important about this story is what Steve Stockman and Steve King didn't respond.
Yes.
Steve Stockman...
He's a congressman from Texas
who's a nut job. Thought he just should invite the rodeo clown to Texas. Texas would love an anti-Obama rodeo clown. Plus, they have no taste there. It's fine.
No.
It's totally fine. He said, from Molly Ivins to Louie Gohmert and every opinion between, Texans value freedom and open political speech. I'm sure any rodeo in Texas would be proud to have this performance.
I do love Molly Ivins.
I love Molly Ivins, too. I'm annoyed that she was used in this context, because this is not...
I'm surprised Steve Stockman even knows who she is.
I'm surprised, too. But he probably... Texans are very Texas-proud people, so they probably know.
And there's
a lot of great political commentators, progressive political commentators, that come out of Texas.
That's true.
Because if you have any sense and you live in Texas...
You got out.
You have to speak up.
Right, exactly.
There's so much to talk about there.
Right.
And you really feel like, because Texas is so self-absorbed and so into being Texas, you sort of have this very bizarre cultural standpoint from which to view a lot of American politics that gives you a sort of insider view on what's going on in a lot of insane places.
Yes. But he also said he was arguing that liberals had created a climate of fear in regards
liberals
to
want to bronco bust dissent.
Oh, wow.
I don't know what bronco bust is. It sounds very dangerous.
Sounds
it's possibly dirty.
That's quite fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in any case, Stockman invites him to Texas. Steve King then thought he should tweet some support as well, and said that the rodeo clan and Obama should have a, quote, beer summit. Is that a thing people are doing?
Well, first off, these summits.
Are we having a wine summit right now?
Yeah, we're having a wine summit. I mean, my wine summit is done.
I'm having
sadly.
A seltzer summit.
I would like a refill to my wine summit. Like, yeah, on that. But Steve King is terrible, as we've discussed in recent weeks. He's racist, so he probably loved seeing this Obama mask on someone who was potentially going to be, you know, gutted by a poll. And he is awful.
And he made sure to, first of all, this is not the only story we have about him being a racist this week. As you might imagine, we have many.
Right.
But he did manage to include in his tweet that his love of this idea was not about race. Because his tweet is, invite the rodeo clown to the White House for a beer summit. Take the temperature down. Have a laugh. Relax. It's not about race.
No.
Which no one had said it was about. So that's interesting that he immediately went there. Because what it was about was being incredibly offensive.
Correct.
To Steve King, that reads as the same thing.
I wonder why Steve King didn't invite him to the Iowa State Fair, because that's going on right now.
Exactly. And I bet there's a rodeo there. There's probably everything next year.
Yes, we've decided that 2014
is the year of the Iowa State Fair.
I call it the summer of fun, which is
the worst.
Bad.
If you could tweet us better ideas if you have them, audience.
I couldn't think of any.
Because Brent was coming up with only terrible ideas.
I
Iowa, the fried fun.
The summer of fair fun is what I said. Well, I went last year.
Right.
And did some great...
Politicking.
Tweeting of pictures.
Of yourself with politicians. Right.
If we would have had an Instagram, I would have really been just winning Instagram last year at the Iowa State Fair, but we didn't at the time.
So. I'm planning to win it next year.
Oh, we're going
to. We're going to win Instagram at the Iowa State Fair.
Anyway, next year will be a good year, too.
Yeah.
Because people will sort of be fake running for president.
Exactly.
Year,
it'll be the beginning of the president. And if it's really exciting, then we go back for the real deal. You know?
That's what we do. We quit our jobs.
We quit our jobs because we don't want to do jobs. We hate jobs.
No.
They're terrible.
Especially ours.
Right.
Our current ones are awful.
Right. So we quit jobs.
That's the first time I've ever said that on the podcast because I'm always like vaguely scared to say it. But like.
But screw it.
No longer.
We're talking about the Iowa State Fair.
It's terrible.
Important things.
Our jobs are awful. Now.
In any case.
Steve King.
We're still on Steve King.
I hate that he's from Iowa.
It really doesn't do much for Iowa.
It's really upsetting.
It makes Iowa look terrible.
It does.
He did a couple things this week besides invite the rodeo clown for a beer summit with Obama.
Right.
He got called out by Ana Navarro.
Which we talked about last week.
For being ineffective.
She basically said...
She was pissed because he was making racist comments, and she comes on as the GOP sort of Latina spokeswoman on various punditry shows.
He was busy going around all of the Sunday shows...
talking about cantaloupes again.
Talking about, how all of Mexicans are...
have calves like cantaloupes.
Right, because they're bringing 75 pounds of marijuana over the border. Right.
He also clarified what he meant by that in his discussion, in his response to Ana Navarro. Well, you would think you wouldn't have to.
Right.
I mean,
Or you would not talk about it anymore.
He's certainly not going the not talk about it route.
No.
Because in response, this is like his third response PS to people responding to his
comment. Well, that comment was like weeks ago.
Weeks ago. Yeah. His response this time was, my statement was very narrowly defined, not even just to drug smugglers, but professional drug smugglers that are in physical shape to carry 75 pounds of marijuana across the desert.
Right.
So,
but he still thinks there are more of those than there are valedictorians.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that's what his comparison
is.
That's the comparison.
He wanted to make sure that we knew that he was referring only to professional drug, not amateur.
There
drug
are
smugglers.
More professional drug smugglers
than valedictorians.
The size of cantaloupes than valedictorians. Exactly.
Right.
But in addition to that, he also was trying to discredit her claim that he is the least effective congressman out there. Because apparently Jeff Flake's office, like, years ago...
Right, a long time... When he was still in the House. Now he's
in the
Senator.
House, exactly.
So, I mean, yeah.
And Jeff Flake was still in the House, I think, when his office...
No, he was. Right, exactly.
Right, yeah. So in any case, he did some sort of study or survey or some nonsense.
And Jeff Flake, as a Republican, was probably doing this study in some sort of, I don't know exactly what the study is, but like, there was probably a slant to the study.
I would imagine.
He probably listed all 200 Republicans in the House as the most effective congressman.
Exactly.
Is my guess.
Yes.
He probably wasn't basing it on math or science.
Right. And in this study, Steve King was ranked third in terms of the number of amendments that he offered that had passed.
Right.
Now, that was years ago, and it was in the Congress, so it really means nothing. But he's still peddling this fake fact that even Jeff Flake's office wouldn't back up when they got called.
Right, they asked.
He was asked about it,
yeah.
And he was like, "That's out of date."
Yeah.
Because he used this in response to Ana Navarro's comments.
And called himself the most effective congressman.
And called himself the most effective congressman.
Right. Not the least.
No,
the most.
The most. He doesn't half-ass it.
No.
But he said something...
That's what you, as I have said many times... That is the one thing that you have to love about Steve King.
Yeah.
I mean, God bless him. He thinks he's the most effective congressman. Mm-hmm.
And he thinks it's fine to mention calves the size of cantaloupes as many times as it takes.
He will be openly racist. I mean, he really just, he doesn't have...
He's saying what's on his mind.
He doesn't have a, you can't shut it off.
No.
Steve King can't shut
it
off.
But I like that as part of his quote in response to this, he said, I might be the most effective congressman there... Rather than a mediocre congressman. Like, he mentioned mediocre congressman, which has nothing to do with anything.
Other people have said that.
Right. But I mean, like, he made sure to mention that he was the most effective, not the most mediocre.
Not mediocre, right.
Which is such a weird way to put that.
Yeah.
Because then it just reminded us that he's entirely mediocre. He said mediocre, and that's how we knew.
Right.
meanwhile, Cory Booker.
Hero Mayor Cory Booker.
Won the primary to take over Frank Lautenberg's seat. He is going on to the general, where he will hopefully. Get a hero's welcome and
he win
everything, and
obviously.
Then he will be in the Senate, and we will have him in the Senate, and I'll be happy. He won't be able to, you know, shovel everyone's lawns or whatever from the Senate.
Right.
But we're hoping that he can be equally heroic in some measure.
Yes.
Just by
being hoping that he can be equally heroic and maybe, don't hate me for this, a little less boring than he is.
Yeah, he's a little dull.
He is like one of those guys where like you sort of like almost like have to love him because he's like doing things like that. But then you see him either interviewed or you see him give a speech or you see him on like a sort of like panel discussion or whatever. And you're like, oh, wake me when Cory Booker is done talking.
I'm going to say something that might be controversial. I think the Senate is the perfect place for a boring person
to be. Well, I totally agree.
Senators are some of the most boring people out there. The only there are two senators that aren't boring currently. One of them is Kirsten Gillibrand.
Correct.
The other is Elizabeth Warren. There is not a single other non-boring person in the Senate currently working, and he would be an excellent addition to that.
He's a nice fit.
Excellent addition to that.
To the other 98.
To that tradition. Exactly. Yes.
Exactly.
Don't so go to their wine parties. Don't go to their...
Exactly. Now, we have some really good news.
Exciting.
Because we've been a little down about how Anthony Weiner's totally screwed over everyone and himself.
We had full-throatedly endorsed Anthony Weiner.
But that is because...
Full-throatedly. Yay!
Yes, exactly.
That is because we did not feel like we could support Bill de Blasio because we thought there was no chance he could win.
Right.
Except that now he's leading the polls and might win. He's peaking at exactly the right moment. Bill de Blasio is the actual person you'd want to support. And I've said this before. If I had a choice between, you know,
I've said this on the podcast before.
If the choice is between people who can win the mayoral race, then that was why I was thinking between Quinn and Weiner. Because they both had the money. Christine Quinn has the sort of connections. Anthony Weiner has the publicity.
And Weiner is...
Weiner was the most progressive...
Policy-wise, who you would want to win. Correct.
Exactly. He was the most progressive of the likely candidates.
So you full-throated Weiner.
Weiner. We'd be the first people, because we weren't sexting him. Just out there. But Bill de Blasio, possibly because Anthony Weiner sort of has fallen
in
favor...
Well, that's what I think. And the other thing that's interesting about this is not only is he winning when everyone is polled, he wins even further when you talk about a runoff. Because if nobody gets over 40% in the primary, which it looks like probably no one is going to do, then you have to have a runoff. And then he really sort of trumps her because,
it's amazing.
What I think that we're learning here is that nobody likes Christine Quinn. She has 22% of the vote.
Christine Quinn has currently been sending desperate emails to all of her constituents about supposed hate crimes that are happening in Chelsea to remind us all that we're supposed to love her.
Some gays were...
Yeah, there's been some hate crimes happening in Chelsea. This has been a problem that's actually been happening a lot
for a while in New York,
not just in Chelsea, but in other neighborhoods as well. But we suddenly have been getting all these emails from Christine Quinn about it. And my mom was sort of like...
That's what she stands for now, apparently.
Exactly. Right. Well, that's the only thing she stood for before, because the only reason we were supposed to vote for her before was because she was gay. Because no one agreed with any of her actual politics.
Right.
She was sort of covering that up by sort of like... thinking that her constituents thinking that her constituents could sort of relate to her on a personal level. But Bill de Blasio is far more progressive than she is. So really anyone in their right minds supports him in a discussion between those two. But it turns out everyone really hates her more than we thought because they're willing to literally elect a complete unknown. He's a public advocate, but public advocate's not the kind of position you get enough publicity.
Nobody knows
who
that is.
No.
I mean, people know
he's a good public advocate,
but
this is some exciting news. Friends. This is exciting news. And he also, he sort of shares a certain amount with Anthony Weiner in terms of, he's from Brooklyn, so he's sort of got this middle class appeal, but on top of that, he's got a multiracial family, he's got a gay son, so he's got all of these other things going for him.
I said he has it all.
He has it all. He's got all of the personal things that you would want in a mayor, plus all of the actual policy things that you would want.
Yeah.
It's real exciting times. Right. I couldn't be more excited.
And he doesn't have a sexting scandal.
Which is the best part.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, speaking of mayors and sexting scandals, or harassment scandals.
Right, I was going to,
Filner.
Oh, Bob Filner.
Won't quit.
I mean, we have been talking a lot about him, obviously, because, last week we talked about how he ended his rehab stint.
Right. A week early.
A week early. He'd graduated. Early graduation.
It's a high achiever.
Bob Filner. But this week we found out that now he's harassing great-grandmothers.
Yeah. There was a 67-year-old woman who works at the Senior Citizen Service Desk in San Diego City.
No age limit.
P.S. She's a great-grandmother and she's 67.
Oh, boy.
That's tough.
That's hard.
That's a lot.
You're lucky to be a grandmother. Right? Or is she just a grandmother? No, she's a great-grandmother, right?
Yeah, she's an overachiever.
Oh, God. Wow. And, of course, her attorney is Gloria Allred. Right. Obviously.
like you would have in this situation.
Right. Sure.
But she said, every day that I went to work, I had butterflies in my stomach because I did not know what was going to happen the next time the mayor came by my desk. She had a press conference on Thursday, called on Bob Filner to resign. He still hasn't, so those calls are falling on deaf ears. He evidently was not that choosy in his harassing. Mm-hmm. He's sort of willing to harass anyone.
Yeah.
He's a real equal opportunity harasser, at least.
Well,
that's good to know.
Something to be said for that, I guess, right?
He liked to make all women uncomfortable. young women.
I would like a male to come out and say that he harassed him. And then we'd be...
Then we'd know.
We'd be on to something.
Then we'd know everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Full circle.
Just a full harasser.
We'd know he had a problem.
Full service
up
harasser.
Until now.
It's just...
We don't really know.
Right. We couldn't possibly know. Once we've got men involved.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, speaking of the Iowa State Fair.
Oh, my God.
There was an incident there.
This was huge news, by the way.
Nope.
In Iowa.
Nope.
Huge
news. I miss this house. I miss this.
The Iowa Butter Cow.
Well, I missed it until Brent told me about it.
The Iowa Butter Cow, which is like...
A cow made of butter in Iowa.
Nope.
Correct. That's what Iowa is.
No.
Also, I wonder what else they have made of butter this year. Because they always... So, they have like
That's a
whole sort of like... They have like a butter gallery, basically. There's always the Butter Cow.
There's a movie.
And then there's always like something... Else, like, what else are they doing?
The
like,
carbon
one
butter.
Year it was like Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, and one year it was Superman because, like, a while ago we had what's his name, Brendan Routh, back in the old Superman days. Like, then one year it was like Harry Potter because Harry Potter had been like the big summer, but it was like the last Harry Potter movie. Like, they always have like some sort of like
thematically appropriate
topical
butter.
Sort
that
of
came
like,
across yeah, Iowa.
I don't know what it is this year, but basically, these vegan
activists
like hung out like in the building where the Butter Cow is all night and then like threw
red paint on the
red paint on it.
So it was a bloody Butter Cow.
It was a bloody Butter Cow. Yes.
I bet you these vegans were not from Iowa.
Oh, I bet they might have been. I bet they might have been. Yeah, I know exactly. I know
Iowa on Iowa crime.
I know
Iowa on Iowa crime.
I know
really?
The few places that they could have been from.
Iowa City.
Too. They could have been from Iowa City.
Ew.
And they also could have been from the East Village in Des Moines.
You should deport them. What are they doing in Iowa?
Send them to Missouri.
Yeah, exactly. there's probably a lot of things they could be processing at the Missouri State Fair, as we know.
Farmers.
They could use some activists over there.
Exactly.
They bust them over to the Missouri State Fair.
They need more use.
The Butter Cow is behind glass.
Right.
So you can't even...
You
can't touch the Butter Cow.
It's unless you're a vegan activist.
Lockdown. And then also, it's refrigerated. They have made a lot of money. Like, literally, like, the next day, they had Butter Cow security t-shirts that they were selling at the fair. Yes.
Nope.
Uh-huh. Got those
and they
quick.
Sold a lot of those.
Oh, my
by
God.
By the way. Yes.
They should have an act of vandalism every year.
They should.
Yeah, I certainly
totally should.
Hadn't given a single moment thought to the Butter Cow until this happened.
No.
Now I'm thinking about it.
The Butter Cow is... This is... Very anti-Iowa. It's disappointing. I mean, it's literally sort of like in a case, you stand in a line to sort of like walk in front of it.
Yes.
You look at it.
And you're
you
like,
take
well.
A picture of it, and you can't take a picture because it's glass, so you get sort of like
a reflection.
You get a reflection. It's not necessarily what
it's like
you really...
going to see like Lenin's tomb or like Ho Chi Minh's tomb.
Right.
Except those aren't disappointing because there's so much pageant
seeing
involved.
Seeing the actual animals at the Iowa State Fair is much more exciting. Like when you go and you go to like where the sort
seeing
of like the farm building is and like you can see like the winner of like the fattest hog or whatever it is. Like that's what you want to see. You want to see like the 1,200-pound pig.
Sure.
You don't want to see the butter cow. Nobody cares about the butter cow.
I want to see the Harry Potter butter.
Oh, and I said it.
I guaranteed a hit.
I just said yeah, exactly.
God.
Oh, God. Jesse Jackson Jr.
Going to prison. So is his wife. Everyone's going to prison in that family.
Right.
Wife's going to prison. He's going to prison.
Right.
They're staggering their sentences so that someone can raise the children.
Oh.
So those are
just tragic.
Children that are going to be in great shape at the end of all this.
No.
It's a mess.
You know,
the whole situation is a mess. He got less time than... was sort of expected
and
for the crime.
A lot of people were thinking that he probably won't spend as much time as he got either. He'll have good behavior. It's not like he's going to be...
I was gonna say, if there's one thing I've learned from watching Orange is the New Black, it's that you can get out in less time with good behavior.
Mm-hmm.
True.
Yeah.
Laura Prepon is going to be doing that, apparently.
Yeah, exactly.
Her
behavior is so good that she's leaving the show. it's foolish, and I'm hoping that that's just a contract dispute, because her career was not going so many places that she didn't need this show.
She got tired of wearing those stupid glasses. Those glasses were terrible.
Listen, she spent like a decade wearing dumb 70s clothing.
It's true.
She can handle the fucking glasses.
Right. Buck up.
Right.
In any case, so that's sad. there's not really any news to report there, but we're just saying it.
Right.
Meanwhile, there is news to report in Newtown.
Oh, God.
Site of terrible, famous gun tragedy. Because now everyone there is trying to get a gun.
Everybody wants a gun.
Their applications for gun licenses
like,
have
doubled or tripled or something. Yeah.
The last thing that solves gun problems is more guns.
People with more guns.
I can't believe that you just said that, Kevin.
Why would I don't have a gun.
I don't know. You're so vaguely conservative, generally.
Vaguely conservative?
We have a vaguely libertarian streak at
times. Lila and I love to tell Kevin that he's like acting like a Republican.
Yeah. That's
what Kevin didn't say earlier, and I should have called him on it, was that he often talks about how it's unfair that Lila and I want him to be taxed all the time.
Yes! It's unfair!
Whenever there's a tax debate, Lila and I use Kevin as our sort of like basis, as the specific person that we want to be heavily taxed.
Yes.
I am the working class American. That's about American values of hard work.
Kevin's favorite thing to say is that he's a working class American.
Yes.
Which he's
and
not.
Much like his belief that he has too much charisma. A little bit of a myth. But in any case, everyone in Newtown is trying to get guns so that I guess they can have more tragedy there.
Then they can shoot each other.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, it was too easy before to just let themselves be mowed down by one crazy
one person.
Gun.
Now they can all kill each other.
Yes. Right. Well, it's like the war that we talk about all the time. The sort of the idea of sending all the gun owners to a place where they can shoot freely.
Yeah, that's Ray Ray.
That's Ray Ray barking. Yeah. Just barking up a storm like she does.
She didn't break into the room this time.
No.
She's barking something.
So she's not gotten smarter at least.
Yes, exactly. Now it can be a new town.
It can be a new town.
Apparently. We wanted to send everyone to, I think, like Montana, but we'll send them to Newtown if that's where they want to go. If everybody in Newtown wants to shoot each other, then all the gun owners can go there.
Perfect site for the gun owners war that we've been talking about.
Peddling for a while. Yeah.
Meanwhile, a weird thing came out this week about Bill O'Reilly and Al Sharpton, who were having like a bit of a feud.
They were having some sort of like odd war of words because like Al Sharpton, I think, like told Bill O'Reilly that he didn't care about the poor, and that
O'Reilly's response to being called a person who doesn't care about the poor was to remind everyone that he had selflessly donated $25,000 to Al Sharpton's charity.
And
one
Al
Christmas.
Sharpton sort of had to acknowledge that that was accurate, that he had done
exactly.
That. And he sort of, like, had done it because they provide Christmas presents and dinners to poor people in Harlem. So,
but, like, I'm sort of curious how this got initiated. Like, was Bill O'Reilly like, hey, Al Sharpton, I was hoping to help some poor people over Christmas.
It's so weird because,
like, they don't like each other.
You would think that Bill O'Reilly would, like, give it to some sort of, like, church or give it to, like, the Salvation Army or something.
Yeah.
Like, what happened that possessed Bill O'Reilly to give it to Al Sharpton?
Well, what better to not make yourself look like a villain if you give to
that's
them,
true.
Right?
Yeah. That's
and
true.
Al Sharpton does sort of just go around and sort of like speak for the downtrodden.
Yes.
So it's like a good vague downtrodden speaker.
Right.
This is probably before he was on MSNBC.
And that's why I love Al Sharpton.
Yeah.
I have said many times, Kevin is going to gasp again, so be prepared for the Kevin gasp. I would vote for Al Sharpton for president.
He didn't gasp, he cackled.
I would do it.
You only get one vote, you know that, right?
I know, and I would do it. I would vote for him in the primary, and then I would vote for him in the general election.
Nope.
He would lose.
Nope. Like a crazy person.
Wildly.
Like,
tragically.
Like, you should pencil him in.
He would lose, he would lose all 50 states, and I would be proud of the fact that I had done it.
Yep. Pencil him in next time.
I might. Yeah. I might have to.
So write him in.
Hillary Clinton's a nominee. I might have to pencil in Al Sharpton.
I might just pencil in myself.
You've done that before.
Yeah. Not for president.
Not for,
but for local office.
Your mother does this too, right?
Yeah. She pencils in her friend Chuck.
It's a classic Nordstrom maneuver.
Yeah, exactly. In any case, in our final story, if you needed more proof that creationists are crazy.
Oh my God.
We have that for you.
We brought you some proof of this because last year, we've been talking a lot about the Iowa State Fair. When I was at the Iowa State Fair last year, we brought you a story about how I had received some pamphlets about how the dinosaurs had been on the ark.
Yes.
Which is a thing that creationists actually think. They think that dinosaurs and humans were together. They were on the Ark together.
Just
like
hanging out, breathing crazy. Fire or whatever.
But now we can...
That's right.
Wait a minute.
And see, this is where we segue into our actual story.
Right.
Because apparently it wasn't just dinosaurs.
No, it was dragons.
Dragons too.
Now...
You may wonder whether or not we have any proof that dragons are real and ever were.
We don't.
We have a lack of proof.
We have a lack of proof.
Uh-huh.
Ray-Ray's barking.
Ray-Ray's real.
There's one thing we know.
If you were wondering whether she's real or not.
We have,
right
we
here
have
on
scientific
barking.
Proof. But in any case, this guy, Derek Isaacs.
He's sort of like a famous, he's written like a lot of books
yeah,
on the
he's
matter.
Written
and he's sort of
a
like,
book
he
called
also
Dragons
is,
or Dinosaurs, among
right,
others.
Right. And he also, he's like the, he's the person who believes in sort of like that thing where, like you have to believe that every single word in the Bible is true.
Yeah.
Like I can't remember what it's called, yeah. but yeah, yes. yeah. I mean, that's sort of like his thing, basically. Yeah.
And so he was on a Christian talk show called Creation Today. which is a YouTube show.
Thank God.
Obviously.
Let out that he believes the dragons are real because
right.
the Bible apparently says so.
Right. Well, here's the
Does
thing.
Does it?
Well, yes. Let me tell you why.
Friends are Bible experts.
I was going to say, as the Bible expert, I'm going to shoot down this theory. Because the only place that the Bible talks about dragons, and it does talk about dragons, is in Revelations. Okay. Revelations, first off, is crazy. If you haven't read Revelations, you should be reading it. Because it's like crazy. The story of the end times is bonkers. Mm-hmm. But Ray-Ray it's a dream. It's basically a dream that comes
dream.
To I can't even remember.
Dream.
Yes. About what's going to happen, like, you know, during the end times. And there is dragons in it.
Right.
But not in the
not
sense
like
that,
a literal
like,
sense,
not
like
the, in
God
the sense
came
that, like,
down and pet a dragon and then...
No! It's right. so crazy. Like, to even, like, use Revelation, like, as your reasoning for anything being real, like, it's just... It's ridiculous.
It's making Ray-Ray upset.
It's making
for
Ray-Ray
sure.
really upset.
Yeah, and she has a very... She has a pea-sized brain, so if she's
she
upset...
She knows the dragons aren't real.
Yeah.
God.
So, in any case...
oh, my God.
That is just further proof, if you needed it, that creationists can't be trusted. Certainly not on history matters.
No. Not at all.
But that's the news for the week.
Yeah.
Thanks to Kevin for
Thanks,
coming
Kevin.
On the show.
Yes.
Thank you.
That was fun. It was fun.
Yeah. And we will be back next week with...
Something.
Something. Yeah.
The news.
And
the news.
The news.
Next week's news.
A special guest, potentially.
Yeah, who knows?
All of these things.
Yeah.
So stay tuned for that, and we will catch you on the interwebs.
Bye.
Bye.